Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from, I would call it the Wells Fargo Center, but where Tim Bontemps is technically a game day for the Philadelphia 76ers. So Bontemps, you are in the...
Well, it is Wells Fargo Center, but the Sixers and all of their PR releases call it the center as part of their ongoing issues with this arena, which is why they're trying to build a new one in about 75 years downtown in the city. So
Bontemps was in Boston 2 days ago for the opener Celtics Sixers. Then yesterday, and I guess earlier today, you were in Canada.
I was in Canada this morning.
Raptors Cavs. And tonight, Bucks 76ers.
Yep.
By the time you hear this pod, we'll know what happened. Joining us from Phoenix, Arizona, where he was at the rematch, the spicy rematch of the playoff series last year between the Mavericks and the Suns, it's Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Damian Lee doesn't have any Game 7 demons hanging over his head.
That's true. He had the game of his life.
A quarter of his life.
Well, even still, yeah. Game of his NBA life. I'm in Los Angeles. If you're watching on our YouTube stream, I'm right in front of Crypto.com Arena, but we had to lower the shades.
You look like you're in the crypt.
I know. It looks terrible, but it's actually like this gorgeous room. But, you know, the miracles of lighting doesn't allow it. Lakers-Clippers tonight here. We've seen the whole league except for two teams. The Bucks and the Clippers haven't played yet. They play in our tonight. Your folks listening's last night. We've gotten, you know, the early, way too early of views of the league. And I just want to sort of go down a little bit of a list from what we're seeing. And you might as well start with that game last night in Phoenix that you were at, McMahon, where the Suns were down 22 points. They made a massive comeback. One of the biggest comebacks, I think the biggest comeback in 5 years that they had.
Yeah, for them since 2017.
And they finished it with Chris Paul on the bench. Monty Williams did not go back to Chris Paul. But before we get into that, I want you to know what you thought of watching the Suns and Mavericks, particularly one certain player on the Mavericks who scored more points than minutes, but then didn't come back in the game. So we'll let you give your assessment on what you saw out of that game for those guys.
Yeah, boy, at halftime, I was ready to find a spot in the desert to bury the Suns. Monty Williams said at halftime, his cheeks were puckered a bit. So certainly it was like,
which
whoa.
Cheeks?
not the one that are near teeth. It felt like, you know, just a carryover from game seven. And then, you know, the Suns scrapped and clawed and got back in it in the third quarter. I think the Mavs got a little cocky, relaxed a little bit. But then, you know, Christian Wood, the more points, the minutes guy that you're talking about, he took over. He scored 16 straight points for the Mavericks. The lead goes from one. It went from 22 to one. You have the Christian Wood takeover. It's back up to 15 with 8.5 minutes left. Then Devin Booker checked in. A couple minutes later, Chris Paul checked out. And as you said, never came back in. And it was just one of those things where, like, the rest of that quarter, there were two things. Like, are the Mavs really going to blow this? And then Christian Wood checked out when Chris Paul did. And I was like, I'd said, I don't think it should be assumed that he will be closing games. And actually, I asked Jay Kidd before the game, hey, with those minutes at the 5 and 4, you know, as you're closing games, how are you, you know, what factors are you considering in terms of who's going to be on the floor? And he said, who's going to defend? And then he said, I'm just kidding. And I was like, yeah, there's a lot of truth told in jest. And he laughed. That's why I do believe that Maxi Kleber is going to be on the floor to close a lot of these games, because he gives them the best combination of defense and then floor spacing, although he didn't shoot it often or well last night. Christian Wood did come back in with a couple minutes left. They kind of went offense, defense down the stretch. He gave about as good of an answer in terms of PR as you could when I asked him after the game. Hey, you know, down the stretch, it's 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes. Like, what are you thinking as you're sitting over there? And he said, I'm just happy to be on this team. You know, he mentioned, boy, I got to make my free throws, you know. And then he basically said, you know, late in games, it's about trust. I've got to earn trust on this team. Now, you know, there might be some folks in the Christian Wood camp who aren't quite so so willing to be warm and fuzzy about the situation and think it's absolute coaching malpractice that he wasn't on the floor for 35 minutes. But again, he handled the answer well. And, you know, the stuff I'm hearing from the Mavericks about him is all very positive. Apparently he hasn't been late yet, which if you know his history, that is a massive change.
Hey, like, seriously. How's player X doing? Well, he hasn't been late yet.
No, like, hey, seriously, like this guy has a reputation for the worst punctuality maybe in the league. And so since I'm talking about like all summer long, you know, he hasn't been late yet. It's a major, major strides. And you know, he's here's the thing. It's just, can he guard anybody? Andrew Bailey, who's a good follow on Twitter, mentioned that last night, when they were on the floor, that I don't have the numbers in front of me, but when Luke and C Wood were on the floor, the offensive rating was like 120 some odd points per 100 possessions. It was like 41 points and I think 16 minutes that they scored, something crazy like that. The problem is they gave up 40 during that time. So
there you go.
He can put it in the hole. Certainly, you know, it looked like he was going to, you know, play a starring role in a win. Things fell apart for him down the stretch, and he sat and watched a lot of that happen.
So, Bontemps, I know you were working the Cavs-Raptors, which came down to the final seconds last night. You were working the locker room. You probably didn't get to watch almost any of this game. But let me just say that my takeaway, it was great resilience for the Suns because they obviously, we've talked about, I was there early in the preseason. My just concern over their overall mood as a team, their lack of depth was on display in this game. The missing of Jay Crowder, even if Jay Crowder wasn't as good last year as he was the year before, not having Jay Crowder, it exposes this team to being a little thin. And in this game, Cam Johnson, who started and had 15 points in 25 minutes, he had leg cramps. So the only reason Damian Lee was on the floor that much really was because they were out of bodies. And you look at Devin Booker, 41 minutes, Bridges, 41 minutes. It was a good win and Booker was great. And I'm not worried at all about not playing Chris Paul at the end of the game. First off, Monty Williams and Chris Paul have a trust level. Secondly, when you have a team making a comeback like they were, it wouldn't surprise me if Chris Paul kind of was okay with not coming back in because they had caught lightning in a bottle, but you don't like to have to catch lightning in a bottle. So while it was a good like little revenge game for the Suns and it did show the resilience. And by the way, DeAndre Ayton looked really good in the second half. He and Booker were really good on the floor together. My big takeaway from the Suns is that they are thin. He doesn't really trust Torrey Craig to play that much. That's kind of the guy who's sort of allegedly filling in for Jay Crowder. And Bontemps, they're going to have to do something with the Jay Crowder spot. They're either going to have to talk him into coming back, which seems like a long shot at this point, or they're going to have to do something because they'll win some games, but they're not quite the same team missing that spot.
Yeah, I mean, if Campaign and Damian Lee, no offense to Damian Lee, who obviously, like you said, had to, you know, the crazy fadeaway shot at the end of the game, scored 11 points last night. If they're playing your top two guys, they're your top 2 minutes guys off the bench. That ain't getting it done when it gets down to it. What I'll say, just looking at the box score, you know, we go back to the spring. Chris Paul had a pretty horrendous final five games against the Dallas Mavericks. I know he was on the. I understand they were making a comeback. He still was 1-for-6. And had 6 points in 30 minutes. Like McMahon, as someone who was there, are we concerned at all about late 30s Chris Paul? And is there some concern that we're maybe starting to hit a bit of a wall here?
You know, a scout who was there last night texted me post game. We're just kind of chatting about the game, and And he said, hey, you know, I agree. It's too much to call this a benching. It was just Monty going with the flow. But he basically said, hey, CP3 deserved to sit down the stretch. Like, he didn't play well. I have made the mistake of saying Chris Paul was on the decline before. Certainly his last year in Houston, I believed it. The league believed it. The Rockets definitely believed it. So I don't want to make that knee jerk statement, but he didn't look good. He is 37 years old. You know, who knows, maybe still a little bit under the weather. Maybe he hadn't recovered from that little bout that he had, during the Western Conference semifinals.
Well, you know? I mean, listen, it certainly could be, it could be a long range situation, but look, I think, to me, just looking at the box, because obviously I didn't get a chance to see much of the game. I saw the very final couple possessions. That was what just jumped out to me just looking at it. It's like 1 for 6 in 30 minutes and 6 points. Like, that's -9. That's not what we're expecting to see from Chris Paul. And while the depth on the bench is certainly a concern, and let's see what happens with the Jay Crowder spot, the reason the Suns were so good last year, as we all know, we talked about it 1,000 times, right? They were great in late and close situations. And a lot of that was Chris Paul and Devin Booker putting buckets in the basket down the stretch. And if Chris Paul is not going to be that level player, like, to me, you just write the Suns off as a championship contending team. Like, if he's not going to be that good, they don't have a chance to be at that kind of level. So that's the one takeaway from the box for me. The other thing is, at halftime, we were texting and you were shoveling dirt on the Suns.
Yes.
And I got to text from a scout as I got back to my hotel room saying, you better turn this game on, that this is completely flipped around. So I was just stunned that, as somebody who didn't get a chance to follow the game because I was busy, I was just stunned how much it flipped, because it certainly did not look like it was headed that way early on.
Well, I think a big part of the Suns' problems in the first half was DeAndre Ayton got in foul trouble. And when Wendy, as you mentioned, he was really, really, really good in the second half. But yeah, the Suns dominating in crunch time, we saw that last year. They were by far the best clutch team in the league, 33-9 in games that included clutch time. So not surprising to see them dominate down the stretch of a close game. But as you said, it's usually Chris Paul who's the one leading the way. And real quick on the depth, Landry Shamet didn't play. You know, he was out due to an injury, so that is a little depth hit, but completely agree on the Jay Crowder situation. You know, obviously they didn't want him to continue to start, but boy, that's at least like a 25-minute per game hole in the rotation that they really don't have an answer for. And I just don't understand the, hey, you know, sit at home and we'll figure it out eventually type of approach here.
That was Jay's call. Jay wanted to sit at home, as far as I understand.
Well, and if I'm running the Phoenix Suns, I say, Jay, I'm sorry your feelings are hurt, but you're getting paid about $10 million this year, and we need you to show up and play.
Well, if Jay Crowder wants to get paid, he also has got to play at some point too, I would think. At some point, you got to meet in the minds there. And like, as you just said, I guess Ayton was in foul trouble in the first half, but to me, looking at his line, 8 for 11 for 18 points. If I'm looking at this Suns team, to me, this has to be the year where they start getting DeAndre Ayton 15, 16 shots a game. To me, like, he's got to get,
you know, used what? To take that many shots. And then Chris Paul got there.
I know, but I think for this team to take a step to potentially take a step forward, especially when we're talking about their lack of depth, I don't want him having 11 shots. I think he needs to get 15, 16 shots. I think they need to make an effort to do that.
I asked Monty Williams pregame, you know, the way I said it was, you know, Ayton's obviously a talented young player with a lot of ambition. Where does he have potential to grow as a scorer within the structure of their team? And he essentially said, like, we don't really need him to grow as a scorer. Like, we've got a lot of guys who can score. And he brought up Mikal Bridges, which I thought was interesting.
I agree. You know, Mikal Bridges could get some more shots too, but like, I just don't understand their handling of DeAndre Ayton from the beginning. The way they handled the contract was a disaster. Yeah. Like, this guy is a talented offensive player. You don't have a lot of guys that can score. Get him some more touches. Get him some more points. Maybe he'll be happier. Maybe he'll talk to Monty Williams then. Like, what are we doing here?
And I asked the question as a way to kind of take the temperature.
Right.
On that situation. And the one thing that that Monty did mention is, well, he could be a little bit more aggressive when he gets the ball down low. You know, he passes out a lot of times. So I was like, that's interesting, because I don't know if he's known as a
he's not exactly Nikola Jokic.
I don't know if he's a big time distributor.
the last two seasons, he has averaged 63% shooting on 11 shots a game. Last night he took 11 shots. He shot 72%.
I know. So I think he's got to shoot more.
All right, moving on. So we talked at length in the various pods leading up to the season about the competition level in the East. So Bontemps, two nights ago, I'm watching Boston play Philly, the game you're at. And
yep.
It's just an absolute talent display. I mean, I don't like how ISO heavy the 76ers are. Maybe we could talk about that later.
Well, somebody else didn't like it too, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a second.
All right.
Was that the stretch five?
It might have been.
So winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. So anyway, going back, when you watch those guys start the game, you're like looking at these two lineups and you're like, these lineups are filled with dudes, you know, and you got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum throwing haymakers at Philly. And then I go to the next night where I'm now watching the game you're at. I made Cavs Raptors a priority to watch on Wednesday night.
Can't imagine why.
The guy that I was with is also a big time NBA person. I won't say who it is because I don't have their permission. And he was in control of the remote and he kept wanting to go to other games. And he really wanted to watch the Grizzlies Knicks.
Fun game
too. I kept having to prod him, go back to Cavs Raptors. But I'm watching the starting, you know, I'm watching that game tip off and the starting lineups. And it's like, my God, these teams are just loaded.
Sure are.
And so, you know, in and of itself of this game, this particular game, the Cavs had a bad break. Darius Garland went out with an eye injury in the second quarter. And they struggled a little bit to score down the stretch, which we'll talk about in a minute. But, and then tonight, Bontemps, you're going to see the Bucks, who, hello.
Only have the best player in the universe on their team. It's not bad.
Like this game, this Raptors-Cavs game, it's 108-105. Toronto wins it, made a couple more plays down the stretch. This is what the Eastern Conference is going to be. These teams are going to bludgeon each other, and they're all so good. And I'm seeing it two nights in. And like, we knew it already, but it's manifesting itself. I mean, the Cavs played pretty good in this game. They shot 50%. They held the Raptors to 42%. Donovan Mitchell in his first game goes for 31. You know, there had some flaws. Assists. Yeah. He played point guard the second half because Garland was out. And it wasn't enough. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, these teams could like be excellent and all win 45 games. And, you know, you've seen it up close. The first two nights, you'll see it up close tonight.
Yeah, and I'll see it this weekend when I see Boston and Miami and Toronto down in South Beach. Like the East is loaded, and I assume we're going to get to Pelicans Nets later. I have some thoughts on the Nets in terms of how people view them in that conversation then. But in terms of these, in terms of the game last night, first, it sort of went the way I thought it would. You know, when Darius Garland went out, the Cavs went back to what they were last year, which was when they had Darius Garland on the court, they were a very good team because he could run efficient offense. When he was not on the court, they were a dumpster fire. And that was the case again last night. It was not a great sign for Caris LeVert, who the Cavs have put in at small forward to start. That was one of the big questions in the preseason. What were they going to do next to the two bigs and the two guards? Who was going to play the third spot? They put Caris LeVert in there. He really struggled in this game with Toronto's length. And whenever Donovan Mitchell went out of the game in the second half, the Raptors immediately took off and scored a bunch of points. So that's going to be something to monitor going forward, because the Cavs are a little short outside guys.
But that's only a problem because Garland was out of the game. They'll be able to have either Garland or Donovan Mitchell on the floor at all times.
That's true. So, but to me, that small forward spot is the thing to watch. It's less about the fact that they struggled with Mitchell off the court. It's that they have those two guys and that's it. Now those two guys are really good, but that fifth spot that's out there, like last night, they're playing Toronto, which is kind of a funky team. They don't necessarily have that elite wing score, but you talk about going up against Chris Middleton or Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or Jimmy Butler, or, you know, any of these, name it, Kevin Durant, any of these other teams in the East, they don't have the guys to go up against those kind of guys. And even last night, Pascal Siakam had an awesome game. Sometimes he's going up against Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, but like, they didn't have anybody to really throw at him when he was going up against any of their wing players. So that was the main takeaway there, besides the fact that Donovan Mitchell looked really good and him and Darius Garland fit well together. And those two bigs, Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, multiple times stoned Scottie Barnes at the rim, going in for dunks. They blocked Scottie Barnes at one point in a 10-second stretch. They were very impressive inside in terms of walling off the rim.
If you were a Raptors fan, the Cavs generated a ton of baskets at the rim. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me about how many shots they got in the restricted area, but in between penetration and between throwing lobs in there to Jared Allen and setting up Evan Mobley repeatedly. And the reason they shot 50% was they were shooting at the front of the rim nonstop.
Well, here's the stats for you. So the Cavs had 50. There was a 52-36 advantage in points in the paint for the Cavs. Cavs were 26-42 on shots in the paint. The Raptors were 18-43. So they got more shots even inside, but the presence of Mobley and Allen at the rim caused them to miss a bunch of them. And frankly, look, that's what the Cavs are built around, right? We got these two guards who are going to light people up. And then we've got these two bigs that when they let guys get by them and get to the rim, they're going to have guys there. They're going to be able to shut them down. And at least, you know, if Darius Garland doesn't get hurt, there's a decent chance that that Cleveland wins that game and things look differently. But from the other side of it, Raptors had a couple guys out. Chris Boucher, Otto Porter Jr. didn't play, but the Raptors are going to be an equally difficult team to play because the way they scramble around on defense, they got all these 6'7" guys. They're flying around, creating steals all over the place.
Classic Raptors game. Six guys in double figures make the plays that they need to make and have great coaching, great adjustments. They come out of timeouts and they scratch it out at the end. That's
and
how
warm down finish. Too. 13-2 run in the fourth quarter, come back from a deficit, pull away and win late at home. But like if this was a 7-game series in the first round of the playoffs in a few months, I'd be pretty psyched. Like it would be a really, really fun
seven
series.
Games. By the way,
probably would be. And to your point about how deep the East is, like these teams might be the fifth and sixth, sixth and seventh teams in the East.
You guys keep saying how deep the East is. I feel like the top eight of the West is just as tough, just as deep.
I agree.
You may be right. I'm just telling you, like the studs in these lineups in the East. I mean, the East is going to have probably
the West has some dudes too.
I know, man, but I'm telling you, like, there's going to be some real stars left off the All-Star team in the East.
You know what the difference is, McMahon? People have been saying for a generation that how deep the West is every year. And the difference is there's no longer this imbalance where, like, the East has got three good teams. Like, there's eight or nine really good teams in the East, just the same as the West, which is that's the difference. It's like that was not – what people well, would say
there,
for a long
the West,
time.
There's eight, and then we fall off a cliff.
Well, yes.
All right. So before we move on to, I want to talk about the Pelicans Nets. My last comment on this Raptors Cavs game, Evan Mobley only takes 9 shots down the stretch. The ball was in Jared Allen's hands more than Evan Mobley's hands. We all know Evan Mobley's terrific defensively. Evan Mobley's got to develop more of a go-to offensive presence if he's going to be the type of player that the Cavs need to elevate them. That did not happen in game one. So we're going to take a look at that. Okay. Pelicans Nets. Bontemps, in the preseason, you saw the Nets several times. You sounded the alarm that despite their changes, their defense looked no better to you, but their defense was their big problem last year. I sounded the alarm that Seth Curry was 5 months off of arthroscopic surgery and not yet cleared to play. And Joe Harris had 2 surgeries on his ankle last year and is now
played one game and now has disappeared, but no setbacks.
The Pelicans looked again. This is another team where you watch them play and you're like, what a bunch of studs, what a bunch of thoroughbreds they're running out in their starting lineup. They are like, Willie Green isn't getting the respect. I mean, I'm guilty of it too. I never talk about them. They are well coached. They are a deep team, and they're currently healthy. You know, Zion is healthy. Larry Nance is healthy. McCollum is healthy. They handle their business. They move the ball. They generate open shots. They have a great balance of shooting. They have a nice balance of veteran players. Brandon Ingram is an absolute stud. And Herb Jones,
man,
in this game, Herb Jones, 2 of 7 shooting, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 6 points. You're like, all right, sounds kind of like a weak link starter. How about plus 34?
How about the one block being blocking Kevin Durant's jump shot? How about that?
Yeah, he blocked Kevin Durant's jump shot from like, he was like 7 feet from him when Durant shot.
It was a 3-pointer that he was closing out to. Like, that doesn't happen. He is the perfect fifth starter for them. They've got 3 guys who might combine to average 70 points per game, 70, 75 points per game. I mean, Brandon Ingram, like this dude, you know, we talk about him as, you know, he might be, you know, he's in that all-star conversation. Dude, he might be ascending to we might be talking about him completely differently by the time the All-Star voting comes around. If CJ McCollum's your third offensive option, you're loaded. And we talked about Zion. Zion looks, I mean, just physically, the way he's moving, the way he looks great. I'm telling you, Pelicans are going to be fun this year.
Now, hold on. I got some things to say. Now, I agree the Pelicans are going to be fun. I had a lot of people texting me last night saying, oh, man, here come the Pelicans. They're going to be awesome.
I'm not saying fart all over the Nets.
Listen, I'm not saying the Pelicans aren't going to be really good. I'm not saying they aren't going to be really fun. They might be really good. Now, I have some real questions about their ability to guard people outside of Herb Jones. Let's see what they look like when they're playing some of these other
Herb
good teams.
Jones guards 1 through 5 simultaneously.
Well, yes. Well,
simultaneously.
He might have to sometimes against with the team they have. But we got to talk about this Nets team. This Nets team has no size. You go up against Jonas Valanciunas and Zion Williamson, 2 big dudes. What happened? Those guys combined for 22 rebounds. They combined for 9 offensive rebounds. They completely pummel them inside. The Nets have no perimeter defense. CJ goes off. Brandon Ingram goes off. This team has no athleticism defensively outside of Ben Simmons. And you could argue maybe Royce Young, or Royce O'Neal, I should say, not Royce Young, our former colleague.
A terrible defender.
No size.
No size for Royce either. Nick Claxton and Daron Sharp, only bigs on the roster. If you look
Daron
at these
Sharp's
other teams,
like 6'8" and a half.
Right. And Nick Claxton weighs as much as me. If you look at these other teams in the East, Cleveland, Atlanta, Toronto, Miami, the 3 teams at the top that we've talked about a ton, I just think all these teams are flat out better than this Nets team.
Well,
I just don't.
But
here's something else. One more thing before you go, McMahon. Without Curry and Harris, they were 21st in the preseason in 3-point shooting. Preseason. Okay. Guess what? Last night, 10 of 33. Not only do they have weak defense, they don't even have shooting right now.
No.
Kyrie went 0-6, but he has proclaimed that he's going to be MVP this season. So I just, you know, sit back, let Kyrie work. He's going to be the MVP. Campaign got off to a little tough start last night with that 6-19 performance. But yeah, Ben Simmons, I've allowed his preseason work to get me back to being optimistic about him. He had 4 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and 6 fouls last night. Never good when you have more fouls and points, rebounds, and assists.
After fouling out of their last preseason game in like 13 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean,
23 minutes. That's
I mean, listen, the Nets have some high-end talent, but I look at this team. It reminds me a lot of the conversation we've had for the past year or two about the Lakers, where they've got a couple high-end players and the rest of the roster is a combination of not very good and doesn't make sense. And this team in general just reminds me a lot of the Dwight Kobe Laker team that people kept proclaiming was going to be good and ultimately was not. And it's just, unless they make a trade, obviously getting Joe Harris and Seth Curry back will help, but you can't look at this team and tell me that there's a logical way they're going to have a decent defense. And without any size and without any perimeter athleticism on the team, unless they can turn Joe Harris's contract into another player, or they can make some other kind of move where they don't have draft picks and they don't have young players to trade, I just don't see how they fix that. And it's hard to see where this goes from here.
They have the Sixers pick. They could trade the Sixers pick. It's not going to be a good pick, but they do have that.
Didn't they give that up to?
They already traded it for Royce Young. I keep saying Royce Young. They traded it for Royce O'Neal.
I mean, come on,
fair
Wendy.
Point.
Like
I seem to remember that trade.
But the good news is, like, if they get off to a rough start, I think this team's going to really stick together, have a lot of resolve. I don't see any kind of internal friction complicating matters. I think everything will be warm and fuzzy there. You know, all's been forgiven with KD trying to get everybody fired. It'll be good.
All right, to be continued there. Another thing that Bontemps said in the preseason was he saw the Knicks play a couple of times, and you were very clear that you thought that the Knicks were going to be better than expected. Now, the difficulty with projecting the Knicks to be better, they won 37 games last year. And the difficulty of the East, they could be better this year and win 39 games or 41 games. And that would still probably be considered not a great year, because then they're going to be stuck in the middle in a great draft. But
I think there's a real chance they could be better than the Nets.
Whoa. Whoa, hot take.
I think it's tough to say that when the Nets are missing their two very important shooters. And if those guys miss half the season, but I mean, I don't know, man.
Get to your point on the Knicks.
All right. I watched a fair amount of the Knicks play. I watched them play a couple times in the preseason, and I watched them in this Grizzlies game last night. And the Grizzlies won, and Ja was absolutely incandescent. And I am proud of ESPN, frankly, that we had the Grizzlies on opening night, because Bontemps and I behind the scenes campaigned for Grizzlies attention over the last year and a half. And then we did the big thing last year where we had NBA Today went out there and spent the whole day out there, and then Ja missed the game. But Ja was absolutely brilliant in this game. And I don't want to overlook that. We'll talk about that in a second. And it was terrific that he was on TV, national TV. But the Knicks have their act together. They move the ball. They are organized on defense. They actually look like they have some depth. I have personally never seen Cam Reddish play this well in the NBA as he played in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and when they have Quentin Grimes, Cam Reddish won't be playing. So that won't be an issue.
Well, maybe they should reevaluate that.
I know he played well yesterday. I don't anticipate he'll be playing.
Isaiah Hartenstein is one of the underrated signings in the Eastern Conference this year. I couldn't believe there wasn't more interested in him. I couldn't believe what they got him for. He's an excellent addition for their team. I I am in, and in this game, by the way, RJ Barrett was terrible. And Jalen Brunson did not have a very good game. And yet the Knicks.
Jalen Brunson didn't shoot the ball well. He did a lot of things well. Fair point. Including drawing a charge that essentially forced overtime.
Oh my God. The guts. First off, it was a tremendous play design by Taylor Jenkins to set the play up. And then incredible play by Jalen. It might have been a block, by the way. Might have been a block, but it was a lot of guts.
What a moment that would have been if the Knicks pull off the win because, you know, Tibbs, you know, long lost son who returned to him, drew a charge to force overtime. And then, you know, then made the pass, drove and kicked it out to Reddish in the corner for the three that had tied it up. Now, why was seconds left? Was Santi Aldama trying to take away the layup when they were up three? I don't know. The Hardenstein thing's interesting. He played 40 minutes. It was an overtime game. He played 40 minutes off the bench. Mitch Robinson played 13. That's it. Let's keep an eye on that. They gave Mitch Robinson a really nice contract to be a 13-minute per game guy.
Well, Tibbs talked him up a bunch in the preseason, and he did have five fouls. I didn't – obviously, this is a game, and I didn't get a chance to see hardly any of either because of I was doing this other game. But, I mean, look, the reason I was high on the Knicks compared to what I think overall expectations were for him was you look at their team, they've got 10 quality players. Tibbs likes to run a second unit. Their second unit with Rose, Obi, Hartenstein, Emmanuel Quickley, and then either Grimes or Reddish makes a lot of sense. Jalen is going to get guys like RJ and Julius better shots. Julius played pretty well, at least by the box score in this game last night. You know, that's a quality performance from them to go on the road in Memphis in the opener and take them to overtime. Like they're just going to be a really difficult team to play on a nightly basis. And Tibbs is going to have them playing hard and guarding people. So, you know, they're just, it's just another example of a team. And look, we've been down on Chicago. They go into Miami without Zach LaVine, without Lonzo Ball, and beat the Heat in their opening game. Like it's just going to be really hard every night trying to get wins in the East against these kind of teams.
I'm just saying, if you're a Knicks fan, you might have something this year. You might have something this year. As for the Grizzlies,
you might have a first round exit.
Well, what do you want me to say? As for the Grizzlies, Ja at both ends. Ja made like three or four plays in overtime at both ends that were just spectacular. You mentioned Santi Aldama, McMahon. So this is apparently, this is possibly the Grizzlies' most recent draft find, draft and development find. He is playing big minutes because Jaren Jackson is out recovering from surgery. He had 18 and 11 as a starter last night. I know he got quite a bit of minutes in the preseason. He was the 30th pick in last year's draft. 7-footer from Spain. And I mean, the Grizzlies started two guys taken 30th in the draft last night. Now Bane,
Desmond two guys Bane, taken 30th and undrafted John Conchar because Dylan Brooks missed the game with a sore thigh. And all guys who they really like, I mean, they love
Bane. Conchar's a good player.
Yeah. Bane really struggled shooting the ball last night, but they feel like he is going to be right in the middle of the conversation about all-star guards in the Western Conference. Conchar, they gave a contract extension this year. I will say this. There was one time where Ja threw a lob in the half court to Conchar, who is deceptively athletic. But it
that's
violated.
What they used to say about you, right, McMahon?
Nobody ever called me athletic and not even deceptively. It did violate an unwritten rule of never throw a lob to a white wing in the half court.
Well, I loved watching this game, and the Grizzlies are nowhere near a hole and they got the win. That was all that mattered. But if you're a Knicks fan, you had to take something away from that. Before we go, I wanted to talk about one more game, and that was the Bulls going into Miami and beating the Heat. Now, we have sounded the alarm about our concern about the Bulls throughout the preseason. Not only because we're worried about their roster, but we're worried about their relative standing in the Eastern Conference, that they could be a team that has gone all in with their trades for DeRozan and their trade for Vucevic. And, you know, what they've signed Zach LaVine to. Zach LaVine started the season on the shelf because his knee is still not right. That is worrisome. Lonzo Ball is obviously out indefinitely. They go into Miami on opening night and win. DeMar DeRozan has another DeMar DeRozan night, 37. He was great. What I will say about the Bulls is while we were singing their doom and gloom and very worried about their point guard situation, which I remain, in the preseason, whatever you want to make of it, they were awesome on offense. They were the number two offensive team in the preseason, both efficiency wise and scoring. And they were very effective shooting the ball. I think they were top five in 3-point shooting, which surprised me when I looked up those numbers. And they go into Miami and they drop 116 on the Heat. And I remain concerned, but I have to admit that actually on the court, both in the preseason and in the opener, Bontemps, they have displayed competence. And that is a high, any win against those top six or seven teams in the East on the road this year is comes with like a little diamond, and they got a diamond out of the gate.
Yeah, they did. But I just want to talk about Zach LaVine. This to me is a really bad sign for him.
Pontemps is the biggest wet blanket in the world.
Well, no. Listen. That's a good win last night. That's a really good win. Brian's 100% right. But this Zach LaVine situation to me is wild. Like this is what Zach said. I was looking up the quote while you guys were talking about it. This is what Zach said on Friday. Last week, not having any aches and pains and being able to play without any limitations in my own mind is huge. Like, okay, I can't go left, or I might not be able to dunk on this play. You're not supposed to be thinking that way when you're playing basketball. And I was dealing with that a lot last year. I'm just happy I feel better. He said that less than a week ago. And then on Wednesday, before this game, he meets with reporters and he's like, yeah, this is going to be the plan going forward. Might have to sit sometimes. Then tries to say there wasn't a flare up in the knee. And then before the game, Billy Donovan says Zach didn't really do any 5-on-5 this summer. And then they ramped him up in practices. And then his knee started to bother him. So like,
instead, Steve Nash burst through the backdrop like the Kool-Aid man and said, everything is fine.
Like, they just gave this guy 5 years at $215 million this summer. And he ramps up in some 5-on-5 and has knees. Now, look. He says it seems like he might play this weekend. I think they play Cleveland at home on Saturday. He could play in that game. They play tomorrow against Friday against Washington. He could maybe play in that game.
Well, but I wouldn't be surprised if they keep him out of back-to-backs. I mean, coming off knee surgery, you're not surprised.
I'm just saying
back-to-back.
I'm obviously last night was a great win. They played really well. Nick Vucevic outplayed Bam Adebayo. Bam's postseason struggles at least carried over to the first game. Interested to see what he looks like against Boston and Toronto this weekend. But the way the Zach situation is playing out, especially in light of what's happened with Lonzo Ball, it's just something to monitor, because if the concerning. Bulls can get all their guys on the court, you know, Alex Caruso, Lonzo Ball, you know, Zach, DeMar, like you go back to the first half of last season, they did look like a really good team. And since January, they've never had all those guys available again. So those quotes yesterday were just wild reading through them. I just was like, what, you know, Robert Williams was supposed to come back from surgery, come back without offseason surgery. He's just going to rest. He's going to be ready to go. And then the week before the season, well, he's got knee surgery. He's out for not going to do basketball activities for 8 to 12 weeks. I'm not saying we're headed that way with Zach LaVine, but hearing the coach say he didn't do anything in the offseason, he ramps up to lead up to the start of the season, and then he has pain in the knee. That's just not a great sign.
Well, as long as we bring up Chris Paul being a little bit worried about him, Kyle Lowry was just banged up and off his game all last season. Again, it's one game out of 82, but Lowry was poor in this one. They played him 35 minutes.
Got some feedback that didn't look great last night. from people watching that game.
Yeah. 1-7, 0-5 on three. You know, the thing about the Heat in this game, they actually, you know, the Heat have high variance 3-point shooters. They have, you know, Hero and Strus and Duncan Robinson are going to jack threes, and some nights when they make them, like, the Heat are going to look unstoppable. They made him in this game. Strus 5-7, Hero 4-8, Duncan Robinson made 1-3. It's not good when you're at home and you get 10 3-pointers from those dudes on, what, 18? They're 10 of 18 on threes and you lose.
Well, look, a little bit. Bam Adebayo was outscored and out-rebounded by Nick Vucevic, who was plus 16 in this game, and Bam was minus 15. Like, if Bam Adebayo is going to be getting outplayed by Nick Vucevic, the Heat are going to be in some trouble. Like, that cannot be how that's going to go.
Well, we're going to keep an eye on those Bulls too. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening.
Hold on. We're not even going to touch on the Lakers. I know they're playing tonight. Come on.
Well, I am worried about it. You know,
LeBron basically, what do you call it? The truth.
You did an entire TV segment about LeBron's antics. And we also didn't talk about.
That wasn't even the most. The most interesting post-game press conference was Russ saying that his hammy acted up because he's not used to coming off the bench. Remember, his back tightened up last year because he isn't used to sitting so much in the fourth quarter like he did.
I was going to say,
if he sits early in the game, it's his hamstring. Late in the game, it's his back. I'm just wondering, how in the hell has Russell Westbrook survived so many halftimes in his NBA career? Like, what is he like, just, you know, jumping in a vat of icy hot during halftime or running on a treadmill? Like, what in the hell kind of passive aggressive, ridiculous crap is this?
And then what happened?
I'm so happy.
Darvin Ham yielded.
I'm so happy. McMahon was so ready. He had this rant. He planned it out. He thought it through. It's beautiful. He was ready.
By the way, my other favorite thing that's happening with the Lakers, Pat Beverly, shoot from the hip, Pat Beverly. His podcast has become the Russell Westbrook propaganda machine. Like, what in the hell is going on here?
But LeBron, well, I have a message for Bev.
I could tell you what's going on there. That's Pat Beverly rejoicing in the fact that he's seen as more important to the Lakers than Russell Westbrook. That's what that is.
And he gets to put his arm around Russ and be 100%. Oh, it's okay, Russ.
It's okay, Russ. It'll be okay. I'm just going to be the essential guy here, and you can be the guy that.
But no,
the big guy that people don't want to play. We still need you.
Yeah, I have to actually have a message for Bev if he's listening this late in the pod. I'm at our ESPN LA studios. You may remember that Bev did a couple of days of work for ESPN last year.
No, I remember. I was on with him.
He left a gorgeous Dolce & Gabbana suit here that is just spectacular.
You should wear it on TV today, Brian.
I do not believe it will fit me, only because the arms are too long. But Russ, you're across the street. You just come over and get it. It's gorgeous. Pat. It's got to be Russ. Oh man, Pat, Bev.
Yeah, Russ has not.
It's got to be
any work for ESPN.
It's got to be at least a $7,000 suit. All right. Last year, you remember we had a rule about the Lakers where we stopped talking about them. And I'm a little bit worried we're headed there. No, again.
That, they have to at least be eliminated from the playoffs. So we can't do that until like right after.
We're not
going to
talk them. We're not going to talk about them every pod. But the first game of the season.
Oh, the hell we ain't.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
No, well, listen, I mean, hopefully we're not going to talk about him every pod. But the first game of the season, McMahon's point, he got Russ saying he got hurt because he came off the bench after he said he got hurt because he was sitting on the bench last year.
And by the way, it was a day-to-day thing that hamstring loosened up just as soon as they put him back.
Magically appeared when he was going to start usually, and play 30 minutes.
Usually hamstrings are something you take risks with. If it's sore, you run right back out there.
No, you just get back out there.
By the way, I did look up all of the times in Russell Westbrook's career that he had a hamstring injury because, you know, some players are prone to hamstring injuries and, you know, they do it once and then they do it 3-4 times in their career. So I have a list here of all of the times Russell Westbrook has missed a game with a hamstring injury. I'm prepared to read them.
I think it's going to take you a long time.
The list is over. He's never had a hamstring injury. At least it was documented that caused him to miss a game.
But if they just had some shooting, if they had like, I don't know, a 3-and-D guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, or if they, you know, a forward who could stretch the floor a little bit like a Kyle Kuzma, it's just so hard to find shooting, you know, if they just had some guys who could shoot the ball, you know, LeBron would have more space to work and everything would fit much better.
Well, listen, Brian broke down the truth shake on NBA Today, and it was a very well done thing on LeBron's history with what he does in these press conferences. Here's what I'll say. Watching him talk about that game, set aside what he said about the shooting, whatever.
The truth shrug.
Sorry.
Let me see it, Wendy.
Let's set that aside real quick. What I was going to say, though, was that press conference to me, it reminded me of January of 2018. Now, you guys probably remember January 2018. That was when LeBron decided to go on a month hiatus in the season, a playing strike, if you will, to try to get the Cleveland Cavaliers to make trades to improve the roster because he didn't like what he had around him. The problem is this is game one of 82, and LeBron is now doing that with a team that, like, obviously he's saying all this about shooting. Let's say they make this Buddy Hield, Miles Turner trade. Let's just say they do that. Trade a pick or two in Russ and do that trade.
Man, they better keep the ball boys away from Miles Turner.
Well, that's wild. But Miles Turner, for those that don't know, Miles Turner sprained his ankle stepping on a ball boy's foot before their opener and didn't play. Does anybody think Buddy Hield and Miles Turner are going to make this team a championship-level team? I certainly don't.
No, but that's their only hope of getting out of the play-in. Well, I shouldn't say only hope. I think they would have a chance of maybe getting out of the play-in.
Right.
This team right now looks like they will, like, if they end up, let's just say they play the Pelicans in the play-in, which is, you know, potentially a realistic scenario. The Pelicans would beat them by 42 points.
No question. And that's my point. If all you could do is trade these two picks to maybe get out of the play-in tournament, you shouldn't be trading the two picks if you're run competently anyway. So now we're looking at a scenario where the Lakers are going into the season. You got LeBron basically campaigning to change the roster on day one. You got Russ complaining on day one. And this team has no path to being good. So, yeah, everything in L.A.
And the coach and the coach back down to Westbrook's demand. But I would just say that, you know, LeBron over the course of a season gives, you know, 100-plus interviews. He used to give 200-plus, but now he's down to 100-plus. So as you can imagine, some interviews are better than others. Some interviews, he is totally going through the motions, which any of us would. Mm-hmm. Some interviews, he is semi-engaged. And then there is the occasional time where LeBron is ready to speak truth. And for me, I could always tell in his eyes. When his eyes are very alert and moving around, you know, he is loose. And we had a truth interview on opening night. Truth interviews do not happen on opening night. And we also don't.
Is that the earliest truth interview of his career?
I have to check my records, but it might be. It's a strong contender. And when LeBron kind of goes on a little soliloquy, he sometimes punctuates it by like tilting his head and throwing his shoulder back, like, you know, And I call it a truth shrug because, you know, sometimes LeBron's spouting the line. Sometimes he's just spouting cliches. And when you've listened to 1,000 LeBron interviews, you can identify it instantaneously. And he was just, and you know, here's the thing is that almost all the time LeBron is right. And one of the things he said in this interview, in addition to them,
I think we need to qualify that statement a little bit. Right.
So like here, LeBron is right and to blame.
Right. That's more of my point.
Just wait a second. Just wait a second. What LeBron said in the interview, which I think we should all heed, and I'm talking about the Lakers, is he made a football analogy. He said, if you have a quarterback who can't throw the ball downfield, you don't throw bombs. That wasn't exactly what he said. It's essentially what he said. You know, he said Tom Brady won the Super Bowl a couple years ago throwing underneath. And so what I took that to mean is, frankly, I mean, stop playing Russ. But I think what he's like, you know, if you don't have 3-point shooters, don't take 40 a game, which is what they are. They were 26th in 3-point shooting in the preseason. By the way, they ranked behind like two or three of the international. The NBA keeps the international team stats who come in for the preseason game. They were behind like two or three of the international teams. The Adelaide 36ers completely blew them away. I will just leave them alone with that. But there were a couple other international teams that came in that shot better than the Lakers. Yet you have them shooting 43s a game. And also, so if you have to win a game, if you have to win a football game by throwing underneath and trying to win by field goals in basketball, that means maybe you can't play the standard NBA where you shoot 43s and you play that way. Maybe they have to start taller players. Maybe they have to take less 3-point shooting. Maybe they have to grind games out.
Hold on. What are they grinding the games out with? Like if they'd played Damian Jones in this game, okay? They didn't play Damian Jones.
I think decent he was a signing. Little banged up. I think he was a little
just
banged
let's
up.
Just pretend. Let's just pretend he was healthy, and pretend they played him. Like that's not fixing the problem here. They have nothing to grind the games out with.
That's a fair point, but I think what he's saying is, he's saying that their game plan doesn't make sense.
What and he's saying is his team stinks. That's what he says.
I know. So here's what I circle back to. We already know this. We know they stink. We've been talking about how they stink for weeks.
Of course.
That's not accomplishing anything saying that they stink. That's why I didn't bring them up. And watch, they'll probably, you know, there will be games where they do make threes. Watch tonight. They'll make 41% tonight and win, but
they beat the Clippers.
So I would just say it goes back to why LeBron extended in August. Why would he extend? Why would he do that? To use my phrase, why would he do that? Why would he extend and take the pressure off this organization? And Rob Pelinka kind of made a answer for that when he at the preseason said, well, when LeBron extended, we kind of realized we're going to trade those two first round picks. And so
they basically made a promise.
Well,
but
again,
my point would be, why do they have to do that? If he doesn't extend, they still are going to have to be under pressure to do that.
Rob Pelinka said they will trade those picks. They owe LeBron an obligation to trade those picks if they can make a trade that makes them a championship contending team. That is what he actually said. There's not a trade on the board that can do that.
Right.
There's just not one. So until that changes,
LeBron shouldn't have extended.
LeBron's going
I agree with that.
Unless LeBron wants to live in Los Angeles, which seems like that's what he wants to do, which
well,
good
then
for
he
him.
Could sign after the year. But they feel no pressure with him whatsoever. And his only way to apply pressure is to make these speeches. And
well,
I don't
think
that will make a difference.
Well, like I said, the interesting thing about it is that he made this speech on day one. We all knew the team wasn't good. And there's just not a path to them doing anything that's going to change anything anyway. So
I don't know.
Just look forward to Victor Wembanyama being in New Orleans with Zion because they end up winning the lottery with the pick. It'll just be the world will end. The world will end.
Oh,
I'm
boy.
Just going to say that I can see an edict on the horizon where we ban Lakers talk on this.
Hey, listen, it'd be fine with me. But the other thing we didn't talk about that game is either this Draymond infomercial before the game his conversation with
McMahon's
LeBron
catch
in the
a flight. McMahon's got to catch
a flight. By the way, the Lakers and the Clippers are banned from Howdy Partners. the YouTube show that discusses the rest of the West.
Oh my gosh. Of course, thank God because, we got that promo in. Thank God.
There you go. Now we can end the pod. That, well, no, I got one more promo. That's because Ohm and Dave, what is it called? This is OD. They have a all LA YouTube show of their own. I'm Wendy, like you've spawned all these little, like we're just I've little spawned. Spinoffs of you, man.
I've spawned. All right. The Hoop Collective. We stay together in the collective.
We stay together like the Nets and the Lakers, baby.
I think we can agree that Draymond Green is not a victim, regardless of how he's made out to.
Here's all we got to say about.
By the way,
here's all we got to say about that infomercial. He says in the infomercial he didn't really watch the video. He said when he did the interview after his first interview a couple of weeks ago, whatever it was, that he watched it like 15 times. So which was it? Which was it?
Also, he's not mad about the money, but what does he do? He shows up to the freaking season opener wearing a money suit, like a bright green suit that's supposed to look like money. Come on, man. Like, Draymond, relax, dude.
It was beautifully shot.
He is doing gorgeous. Too much.
It looked like one of those interviews that they would do on Hard Knocks.
I'm sure the Warriors
a hell of a lot better than yours right now. That's for sure.
That's true. I agree.
I'm sure the Warriors are just thrilled at going into their ring night. That was what was being done on the broadcast. I'm sure they were thrilled about it.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. McMahon, have a safe trip. Bontemps, we'll talk to you next week after you've been in Miami. Thanks for hanging with us. Next week, we're going to go to twice a week. We will have first podcast on Tuesday, and then these jokers will be back on Friday. God knows what
will happen. I was saying Wee's doing a lot of work in that one.
Thank you to our producers, Jackson and Bruce. Have a good weekend.
Adios, amigos.